Yo, it's the Breakfast Club, bringing flavor to the game. At the Nordic, don't make days, ain't no one to say. We rocking suits and ties, making more that.
Hey everyone, and welcome again to the Breakfast Club podcast, the show where we talk about domain investing, life, and anything else in between. We have another great episode lined up today, so let's dive right in. As usual, I'm joined by Alan and Braden, and today we're covering some big updates in the domain world. Alan, Braden, welcome to the show.
Glad hey, here. Good to be back.
Yeah, nice. So before we start, let's keep our tradition going. Where is everyone dialing from today?
I'm at home in Los Angeles.
Still in Boston.
All right, cool. So for me, I just came back from Italy and back in Dubai, where finally the weather is getting a little bit better, so it's not as hot. And the nice, cool thing is that just in a few weeks, there will be Domain Days Dubai, I think 5, 6 November. Braden, I heard you are coming. I saw you were like lined as a speaker. What's going on there?
Yep, Munir's got me on a few panels. I'm not sure which ones, but I will be speaking and moderating. And then from there, I'm going to the ICANN conference in Istanbul because, you know, I've gone that far. I might as well. But actually, a bunch of people are going to go from one to the other.
So. Yeah, it's actually a very cool combo. But for those people who are actually considering going to Domain Days, actually, I was talking with Munir. He told me that they're almost sold out. I think there are more than 200 people registered. And so I wanted to ask you, like, what did you like about last year? Like, what do you think about the event in general? What do you think it's good for? Or, like, any particular thing that you remembered from the event?
You know, what I liked about it was a lot of the folks from that part of the world were out there, whereas they don't come all the way to the U.S. for our conferences, at least not very often. So it was good to see some faces I don't get to see very often. And then I met some new investors from that part of the world that are, you know, serious domain investors that just don't come to our conferences.
Mm-hmm. What about like the events? Did you like anything like the party or like what was the highlights for you? Like one takeaway that you took from the event that is relevant for the audience?
I thought Munir did a very good job organizing that conference. It was tight. It was well put together. There was a lot to do. There was good networking. And let's be honest. I mean, most of what we go to these conferences for is networking and not so much panels. And he had a lot of activities, so it was good. There was dinners. There was literally multiple dinners every night. Now, one night I went to 3 dinners. And yes, I ate at all 3 of them. Yeah.
How's the vegan food in Dubai?
There's everything in Dubai. It's a major metro. It's like a kind of a melting pot of the world. So there's a little, it's like Vegas. There's a little bit of everything.
I forgot to tell you, Braden. I went to the only vegan 3 Michelin star restaurant for my birthday. I figured you'd be proud of me.
I am proud of you. It's 3 Michelin stars?
Yeah, 11 Madison Park in New York.
Oh, 11 Madison, yes, great. Yeah, for sure. So
I just finished reading a book about them, and I was like, I got to go, even if it's vegan.
So somebody else paid?
No.
It's an expensive restaurant.
So we went for lunch, so it wasn't as expensive as dinner. But I was going mainly to watch the customer service and see how they interact with people. And like even from the moment you walk in the door, they know who you are. They take you to your seat. They knew the allergies that I have. I was with 2 other people, and the person was about to push in my chair. And I was like, oh, that's weird. It feels weird having my chair pushed in, and what are they going to have to wait for the other 2 to be pushed in? But simultaneously, it was like a football team coming together. They had like 2 people come from the side and push the other 2 people's chairs in. Just the level of customer service that they provide is spectacular. And surprisingly, the vegan food wasn't bad either. Like there was nothing that I ate that I was like, oh, I wouldn't want that.
Wait, I'm sorry. So you went to a triple Michelin star restaurant and the food wasn't bad? Is that what you just said?
When you put vegan after anything, you always have some questions.
They still got 3 Michelin stars. I just went to last month a Michelin star restaurant in Paris. I was on my way to the London domain conference and went to Paris first. And I went to a restaurant called, I'm going to mispronounce it, but it's RPG. In French, it's probably something different. And it was the same kind of thing where they push your chairs in the same time. They walk up with all your plates, and then they look at each other, and then they put all the plates down at the same time.
Yeah, nice.
The coordination, the choreography is
It's
fun
like
to watch.
watching a dance.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So, okay, great talking about Michelin star restaurants, but let's bring it back to domain names, and especially like let's explain how Braden is. You know, it's going to all these Michelin star restaurants, and the reason I'm going for it.
Yeah, and I pay, unlike Alan, I pay. And
And
it
he
was
pays.
that restaurant was shockingly expensive, by the way. It's
Guys.
probably the most expensive restaurant I've been to, other than like, bottle service in Vegas. But it was $500 a head at that restaurant, which is crazy.
Guys, everyone has heard it. Braden pays for his bill.
That's right.
Anyway.
And I like the transition. I wish we would have stayed on that. Braden, how do you pay for all these meals?
Well, I use,
Domain names.
yeah.
What domain names have paid for
I'll
that
tell you,
meal?
my secret, Apple Pay.
And this podcast is brought by anyway, let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about how Braden is able to afford all these Michelin star dinners. So, as you guys might know, we publish every quarter the Liquid Market Report, which is it's a report that we publish in collaboration with Intellium, who are the creators of Estibot and DomainIQ, as well our data partners, which include escrow.com. And starting from this edition, also named Bayou. So we've been publishing this report for over 8 years, and this is like the 33rd edition. And we pretty much focus on all the indicators that cover the what we call liquid domain names. So everything that surrounds trueletter.coms, freeletter.coms, for letter, true number, free numbers, all those short categories that are all taken and have kind of like a liquid floor value. And we cover like a few indicators like the total sales provided by escrow.com, the fifth percentile, which is pretty much the covers the floor price of the most traded categories. And this quarter, one of the most interesting things was that the escrow sale actually went down from 20 million, they went down to about 7.7 million. But the disclosed sales, as provided by NameBuyer, they kind of stayed the same. And when I was looking at the biggest sales, guess what I found?
What did you find?
A Michelin star restaurant.
I found these free sales, and they were all like by this guy called Legal Brand Marketing. Have you ever heard about this guy?
Couple times. He's a schmuck.
The top sales was like gosh.com. And then there were like a few others that I saw, like continue.com and cancel.com. So for all the audience that is following, Legal Brand Marketing is basically Braden's company. So Braden, do you want to talk a little bit about these sales, how they went down, and what's the story? And because it seems like the overall the market was kind of slowish from these metrics, but from what we heard about you had like an amazing summer. So you're one of the guys who did the best.
Actually, Q3 was the biggest quarter I've ever had. Not summer. I've since so those three sales, Gosh was not the largest sale. Gosh was 475, Continue was 550, and Cancel was 300. And then I've since actually had two seven-figure sales
All right, well, so there was like a
in
great quarter for
Q3.
you.
Yeah, which it's inevitable when you I'm spending 7 figures a year buying names, so it's inevitable that I'll eventually sell them. So you want me to tell you where they came from? What
Yeah, so what's the
what's
story?
the
Like what's like, good learning points for all the guys that are following?
buy good names. The thing is
Are
that
either of the
what a lot of
seven-figure
messages.
deals public? Or can you share the?
No,
Oh, okay.
they're not,
They're
unfortunately.
one-word.coms, though.
Yeah.
And when did you acquire each of them?
Both were acquired in the last 3 years. One's 2 years old, one's 3 or 3.5 years old.
So, and what did you buy them for?
Low 6 figures.
low six figures. Was it from direct outreach? Was it through Expiry Marketplace? How?
Inbound, but both, no, both were inbound.
So inbound is in someone said, "Hey, Braden, I'm trying to sell this domain name."
Oh, when I acquired it?
No,
Oh,
when
sorry.
you acquired it, how did you
Sorry.
trying to start from the beginning?
Okay.
Except he wants to get a lesson here. It's how did you get it? How did you buy it? And then how did you sell it? So first is the
Okay,
acquisition. You can't sell
so
it if you don't have it.
one of them was through a broker. It's 2 years ago, Dave Clements. Another one was through someone that brought me a deal, and I paid a finder's fee.
So was the Dave Clements one that you reached out to Dave on because he was brokering, or was there a
No,
newsletter?
he brought it to me. It might have been a newsletter. I don't remember, but usually they reach out to me. The brokers will reach out before newsletters go out, as soon as they get a deal. And then sometimes I see my newsletters and I make offers.
So in essence, like this wasn't any necessarily special thing that someone else couldn't repeat. It's a matter of looking at what's coming for sale by brokers and.
Yeah, I mean there it's all first of all you have to have the relationships with the brokers so that you're either getting their newsletters or you're in touch with them. There's guys that are out there sourcing deals and then you pay them a finder's fee. But you have to make quick decisions and you have to pay them their finder's fee, right? Because if you screw them, they're never coming back to you. But I mean, those are just two of the deals. I've sold over 40 names this year, and some are on Afternic, some are direct, a lot of them are direct. They're all over the map. I've had brokers come and ask for a list of names, and they pitch their client who has a particular budget. Some was just direct. People wanted a particular name, and they reached out to me. I've had a number of six-figure deals, including two .NETs that were in the six figures. A couple of .NETs that were in the mid five figures. I sold five .VCs this year. I mean, that's they're
All
only
right.
$3,500, but I paid $5 for them. So it's been a little bit of everything. I've sold some .IOs this year.
All right, cool. So let's bring this back in the framework of the flywheel. So you first got most of these domain names, they came to you through inbound, so either like with people that you have a relationship with. When you priced them, like what was your idea like about pricing it in compared to what you paid for it? And where did you list them?
So when I buy, I try to buy at a tenth of what I think it's worth.
Right.
Right. So I try to 10x it. Now, one of the seven-figure names I sold was a 15x. The other one was a 11. I sold Super.net, which I bought on auction. I'd have to look up where I bought it from, but I think it was a GoDaddy auction or maybe a NameJet auction. NameJet, perhaps.
That's super.
And I sold that. I had that for 2 months. I sold it for a 10x.
Where did you list it?
I list everything everywhere. So there's Landers. That was a Dan Lander. But I put it on Afternic. I put it on Cedo. I put it everywhere.
All right, great. And so the inquiry for this once came also for a broker, or it was like directly through the lender. What about the other two? Let's say continue.com and cancel. Did the inquiry came from?
Continue came through. Initially, it came through the lander, which that was an Adam lander. And cancel was GoDaddy. GoDaddy bet Hilco, so it was GoDaddy and Hilco did a deal. I think they went to the Adam lander, but then they had a relationship with a GoDaddy broker, and then they called their broker to get the deal done.
I thought that one was on a Dan Lander, because didn't you get an offer from Dan on that one and from GoDaddy at the same time? This was the one that you were interacting with directly with the client at first.
No, that was super.net. That
Just
was
had a.
super, yeah. Because I had back and forth with the buyer, and then they called the broker at GoDaddy to negotiate on their behalf. Cancel. They went to the lander, and then they called up a broker.
We just do so many deals for you that they all get mixed up.
You were involved in several this year for me. Yeah, thank you. Keep doing it.
No.
Or stand down and let me handle it myself.
For the record, it's not me.
You get all the credit, Alan.
Yeah, no, we have some awesome brokers that they're doing a really good job.
All right, cool. Braden, can you also talk a little bit about the negotiations? How is there anything that stands out, or like any specific story from these negotiations?
I believe two of the deals that I did this year came from India, and India has very specific requirements. The Indian government requires the company selling it, or the broker, to be registered. So there's a whole bunch of paperwork that needs to get completed, and they only have to do it once to register with the Indian government. But if they're not registered with the Indian government, then the company in India can't buy the name.
Mm.
So there were some hoops to jump through, because initially one of the offers came through a broker that could not handle the transaction, and they had to bring in a broker that could because of this registration issue. The other one came through a broker because they're registered and they can sell names to Indian companies. So that was unique. I hadn't dealt with that before.
And I'm assuming that GoDaddy is registered in India. Like, he's one of the brokers that like actually do business in India.
I'd assume, Alan.
And we do quite a bit of business in India.
This is like a quite interesting. Like, how is the India market going on your side? Like, do you guys see like a pretty good progress in that?
Like, I don't know off the top of my head. It'd be something I'd have to look up. I mean, I interact more with the seller side right now than with the buyer side. So on the seller side, I love the amount of sellers that we've had that have really taken off and shown success from the India market. We see a lot of growth there from people who are acquiring great names, listing them for sale, and managing them well. So I imagine it's the same on the buyer side, but I don't have details.
Got it. So you're saying pretty much that's a pretty good homegrown market in India of people who actually started out in domain investing and then they progressed, like, you know, they actually working very well with the flywheel and they started to reinvest in more domains. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think the advantage of domain investing is it doesn't matter where you live in the world. It's something you can do from anywhere. And it's the reason why, like, you went to Italy and Braden was traveling in France, as you mentioned earlier. You don't have to stop working as you're traveling around, which also means if you live in India, if you live in Japan, if you live in LA, it doesn't matter. You're competing on the same level playing field.
All right, awesome. Okay, cool. And for every domain investor who's out there, pretty much a lot of the people were using Dan.com as like one of the main providers for lenders. I think, you know, you guys acquired the company. I mean, you guys in terms of GoDaddy acquired Dan a few years ago. And so like just a few days ago, I actually logged in my account at Dan and I saw this notice that it's mandatory to migrate by the 16th of October, I believe, to Afternic. So, Alan, do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on there and what's changing? Is there any action that investors need to take for this migration?
Yeah, I guess from a very high level, the goal that we're aiming towards is to do everything we can to accelerate domain sales and to make it easier for domain sellers. A problem that we ran into is we had several different platforms that did similar things. If you rewind a couple years ago, we had five different platforms where domain sellers could list their names for sale, five different platforms that they would have to, they could purchase domain names, and five different systems that manage the inventory. And the issue with that is anytime you want to make an update to any of those systems, now you have to work across all five systems for each of those. And it's also a distraction for the development teams, is each of those five platforms, they're supporting both the buy and sell side. And so what we're doing is you've seen a very deliberate effort to bring all those systems so our teams can focus on delivering what matters in specific systems. In the case of Afternic is the platform where sellers go and list their names for sale, optimize their listings. and GoDaddy is where we're sending buyers, and buyers are familiar around the world with the GoDaddy brand. It's where we have the best conversion rates, and it's where we want buyers to end up. And so when you look at something like Dan, we spent the last year or so bringing over the functionality from Dan, and there's been a lot of upgrades on Afternic, bringing over the custom lander, bringing over lease to own, and actually taking it to the next level where now lease to own can be paid in any currency that GoDaddy accepts, whereas at Dan they had to pay in the currency of the seller. Bringing over the launch this week of invoices, so make it easier for particularly for Europeans to be able to see out the payout transmittals and the VAT tax and whatnot that is applied there. And so we've brought over the functionality from advanced filtering and all these other feature parity items that have been brought over, that it makes sense now to migrate Dan over to Afternic. So now there'll be one place where we can manage selling and one place where we help manage the buying side, and we can have our teams focus in on that. And so that's happening here within the next month. I think the auto migration, if people haven't self-migrated or opted out, is going to start next week and through the end of October. And then we'll be migrating the lease-to-own transactions over to GoDaddy on the buyer side and to Afternic on the seller side throughout the remainder of the year. So super excited to get on one platform because it should enable us to innovate quick.
All right, awesome. So is there any action that the users need to take before the migration, or will they just migrate by itself if you don't take any action?
Yeah, so no real action is needed. The only recommendation that I would make is if you have domains listed for sale on Dan that you don't own, that you go in and clean up your portfolio. Hopefully, you've been doing that the whole time. But if you don't own it, it's going to be migrated over to Afternic. So that would be the one recommendation.
All right, awesome. Okay, any other exciting news or exciting things that you think that you can share that is coming up on the newly and improved Afternic?
I mean, the thing that I think most people are going to be excited for, or the two things that most people would be excited for, is self-brokerage. Right now, we offer make offer landers, but brokers assist with it. Early next year, we plan to launch self-brokerage, so you can manage your own leads through Afternic. And
All right,
then
cool.
the second thing would be that self-serve ability to fix your own listings. If a name gets opted, let's say that you let a domain expire at Dynadot sends an opt-out to Afternic, and ultimately that puts it in pending review, and so you'd have
Got
to
it.
opt it back in. And so right now you don't have the ability to self-serve that, and so you'd have to do it yourself. And hopefully towards the beginning of next year we'll be launching a self-serve center that you'll be able to resolve that yourself. And to me that's exciting because it puts the tools in the hands of domain investors.
All right, awesome. So basically, when you say that there's going to be self-brokerage, it means that there will be like no commission or limited commission. Like, how does that specifically work?
Nope, it'll be very similar to Dan.com. The commission is still charged, but you're able to interact directly with the buyer.
All right, cool. All right, nice. All right, guys. So we almost hitting the 30 minutes mark. Is there anything that you guys wanna share with the audience, or anything you'd like to say before the end of the episode? And looking forward to Domain Days.
There's been a lot of discussion about the .io extension going away,
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I'd be willing to bet it's not going anywhere. There are too many. There's too much revenue coming from that for them to kill it. The same happened with .ws when Western Samoa disappeared.
Yeah, can you expand a little bit on it for people who are not familiar with what's happening with .io?
What's the exact? I don't want to say exactly what it is because I'll screw it up.
Yeah,
Um,
I can
but
share
the
it. So basically, like I think the .io standard for Indian Ocean. So it was like, I think, a British overseas territory that was recently given back to Mauritius. I think like just like last week or so. So it was very recent.
Yeah.
So pretty much, as a British territory overseas, it just ceased to exist. And when a country ceases to exist, it technically loses the right to have the CCTLD extension. So there's kind of some speculation whether it's going to continue like to run the .io extension or not. So and I guess you can continue to what you were saying.
So there's a and there's been a couple of countries where they've killed the extension a long time ago. However, more recently, there's been countries that have disappeared and they have not killed the extension, including Western Samoa. And as a matter of fact, Alan Izer, who's an old friend of mine who was running .ws for many years, he sold out to his partner. But he had told me that when Western Samoa was going away, the government called him to have a meeting. And he was concerned that they were going to kill the extension and it was going to kill his business. And it was the opposite. They said, you're still willing to sell .ws, right? Because, you know, it's we're still going to maintain it and we hope that you still want to sell it because they wanted the revenue. And so it's funny that they both were concerned that the other one was – the other party was going to move away from .ws. But it never went anywhere. Even though the country doesn't exist, .ws is still alive and well. Not great for the aftermarket, but the registry does fine.
Yeah, and I think the difference between like .ws and .io comparative to the ones that have gone away, like .yu, Yugoslavia, is the use case of who's actually using it. And so .io isn't necessarily used by the citizens of that area, neither .ws, which was branded as website when they were rolling it out, whereas .yu was most likely all Yugoslavians at the time that were using it. And so I think there's a difference between a TLD that's marketed in a different way. So hopefully that's the way it turns out, but I would expect the
same. I think there's too much money behind it for it to go anywhere.
Yeah, but it's still very interesting to look that all these CCTLDs, they always have this risk as countries do not exist anymore. And it's something that I was still like, you know, trying to factor in whenever like looking at buying an extension or using an extension. Anyway, so guys, we're really like short of time. Anything else you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
I'll see everybody in Dubai.
All right, man. I'm looking forward to see you out. Alan, I hope to see you soon as well in Boston or somewhere else. We could have like another one of this lunch, possibly at the Michelin Star restaurants. Actually, that's a good proposition for like next year. And yeah, I guess it's great to chat.
Does that mean that the Breakfast Club is going to go away and we're going to kill that extension and we're going to be the lunch club?
The dot. No. I think we can do like, how do you call it? One of those segues. And then we come back to the Breakfast Club.
Transition. All right.
Yeah.
You see?
All right. Okay, guys. Have a great one. Bye-bye.